The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.
Wow, what a day one. 7 winners out of 7. I mean, what a day for the Final Furlong podcast. I have no idea. I'm recording this 2 days beforehand. But we can be optimistic and say that we're...
Just in case.
Say that we're going to war with loads of the Tote's money. As we go and fire back, don't forget that the deadline for Tote's 10 to follow Royal Ascot mini game is midday Tuesday. So midday on Queen Anne Day. That's an incredibly kind deadline, by the way. So get your entries in. It's £5 or €5.50 per stable. There's also a free game as well. And 100% of the pool goes right back in. Joining us as we preview day two, alongside me, Emma Kennedy, you've already heard the arguably first lady of the Final Furlong podcast, Miss Kate Tracy.
Hello, good to be back. The sun is shining, the Euros are on, England won their first game, and Royal Ascot is coming up. So I am very happy and very looking forward to this.
I watched that England game in a pub yesterday, and after an anniversary mass, and cheered when Sterling scored, which is a very weird experience for an Irishman who's a Liverpool fan to be going, yay, well done, you turncoat. But anyway, that's fine. I was actually genuinely pleased to see England win, and I'm not one of those bitter Irish people who would like to see them go out first. I don't get that. I support Liverpool. It wouldn't make any sense to be like, go in the first round. A man who has no idea what we're talking about, but will have great insight for the entire week of Royal Ascot, which is all live, like the Euros, on ITV, which is fantastic. They have all 7 races per day live on ITV, so that's great. Is Mr. Peter Fornatel.
Good to be here, and you've got it all wrong. I'm a big fan of world football. I was watching the matches with interest over the weekend. An Italy supporter because of my heritage. I was actually doing a live stream during the first match and making loud noises at inappropriate times.
Hey! Oh, Peter, just as happy as us then.
Brilliant.
In fact, maybe a little bit more.
Well, actually, this is something that didn't make it into yesterday's show, but I was being very nice about England. And out of nowhere, out of the blue, De Larghi has a pop at me, which is fair enough. And then Tom Bull goes, yeah, by the way, when is the first Ireland game? I'm like, I was nothing but nice to you and your team. And that's what you lay at my door? I don't think so. Oh my god, yeah, we stink. Anyway, 2:30 Royal Ascot. Wesley Ward, he's talking up his horses again, as he always does, but to be fair, as Pete has pointed out in the show before and pointed us in the correct direction before, often for the right reasons. So Twilight Gleaming in day two, opening race, the Queen Mary over the blazing 5 furlongs, representing Stono Street's stables. Aidan O'Brien is running yet, interestingly enough, with a first-time tongue tie, and you can hear Aidan's thoughts on her and what she's like at home and what he made of her debut and what he thinks of her chances on the Royal Ascot preview with Aidan and Oisin Murphy, which was a huge success, and thank you for all the kind words on social media. That being said, are they bumping into a speedball here with Twilight Gleaming? Pete.
This is one of the awards that I really like. Super impressive in that Belmont turf race, showing the customary speed, but also really finishing off the race. Fine Irish pedigree, we'll note as well. And I'm thrilled to see them turn up in this race, the one where Ward has had the most success. And I got a figure based on that as putting his best foot forward. The last workout was apparently very strong. I think it's all systems go for Twilight Gleaming.
I wonder, is going with Coffee Maker, who obviously got beat by the Acropolis, I think, in the Coventry, that he's kind of taking a free roll of the dice at the Coventry with Coffee Maker, because why not? I've got this horse to back me up in Twilight Gleaming. And that's kind of how I read what he was saying, because his stable tour, he was saying in the Racing Post, of all of the horses that I'm sending, this is the one that I'm most confident about.
I think the positioning shows that. There's been a lot of money for Coffee Maker in the Coventry, and I've been a little surprised. The speed figure from the race at Keeneland did not come back strong, and you might be surprised to know that historically the speed figure earned in these 4.5 dirt races has been a pretty good pointer of how they'll perform at Ascot, despite how different the discipline is. But I'm a little bit nervous about Coffee Maker at the price, whereas I feel like Twilight Gleaming really offers some value at the current numbers.
Okay, so we're with Twilight Gleaming, who is currently a 7-2 shot, which is very fair. But is Kate Tracy going to come in and spoil the party?
No. And as I was saying there before we started recording, that I actually didn't realise that Mr. Peter Fornatar was going to be on the show here. And I thought, wow, that's my work. That's just pointless now, isn't it, for Wesley Ward's horses? Just echo all of the sentiments above with Twilight Gleaming here. And the fact that I agree with Peter as well, that I think that she's actually a bit of value at the head of the market here. And there's a reason she narrowly heads Time Form's ratings in this race, and justifying the odds on favouritism, as just said, at Belmont. And she was seriously impressive in that win as well, visually, at least anyway. Irad Ortiz didn't have to touch her. He barely had to flex a muscle there to get her to win by 7.5 lengths. Of course, we don't really know what the form amounts to as such, because only the fourth place horse has been seen since and finished fourth again. But you couldn't help but be impressed by the way she did it. And it is interesting that Wesley Ward has only left her in the Queen Mary, because on three separate occasions she's had two runners in the race. The market has guided us in the direction of which horse was then going to feature in the finish. And of course, we only have a one horse to go on here, with Ruthin being cited for the Windsor Castle instead, and was the antipost favourite for the race. So I thought that was a very interesting move. But from what I read, it was because Twilight Gleaming was impressing Wesley Ward more so than Ruthin in their work since they've come over here. So you can take that sort of one of two ways, but I would take it more so in the camp that Twilight Gleaming comes here in cracking form and has really been impressing more so than Ruthin has been disappointing. And with Wesley Ward's previous Queen Mary runners, they've obviously got outstanding figures, 4 from 13, a profit of £6.50 to a £1 level stake at SP. So nice. I think there's a fair amount of value about Twilight Gleaming here. And yeah, she does just look very fast, very impressive. And yeah, there's not really a way I'd want to be siding against her here, I don't think.
Going for back-to-back wins after Campanella's success in the race last year, I'm going in with you as well. And it's no longer a blind thing either, Pete. It's not just like we're asking you for your view. Look at what Kate, and listen to what Kate has just said, the amount of detail that she's just gone into. We have all that access now to that information. I think the speed figure that you mentioned is very, very useful to us, and we should use that going forward for Ascot. But we're not playing blind anymore with these American horses. We can actually look properly at form. And they're all juveniles. They're all babies. Anything could happen, but we know what happens with these ones. And with Good to Firm, at least good going, she should rattle off the ground. Queen's Vaz is a race that Aidan O'Brien has an outstanding record in, including a 1-2-3 in 2018. And fair play to him. He told us that it would be Kew Gardens' brother who led home that 1-2-3 in 2018. Wordsworth, who would lead the way, along with Kyprios. Arturo Toscanini is a horse that Roy DeLarge is very keen on, and he's in here as well. And he did step forward massively last time out on the day of my birthday, funnily enough. But I quite like Kyprios, actually. I think the Lingfield run was all wrong. A mile six. So we'll let Pete take a step back for a second, because Pete's fine. Pete watches National Hunt Racing. Pete could come on this show and talk about Cheltenham and talk about it in depth. But for a lot of Americans, and America is our third most listened to country. A mile six? My God, what the hell are you doing over there? Wait till you see the Gold Cup, folks, on Thursday. That's going to blow your mind. The Queen's Vaz. Kate, take the lead. Who do you like?
Yeah, well, I actually wanted to take on Wordsworth here. I wasn't taken with his most recent start at all. And I think I said that on the review podcast as well, because he had a high head carriage. And for all you could dismiss that visually at first, but the way he flicked his ears around just didn't inspire me as a horse who was really pushing through with his finishing effort. And The eventual winner, Sir Lucan, didn't have the most straightforward head carriage, but it still was better than Wordsworth. And I just wasn't taken with that listed race at all on the good ground. So it wasn't even as though conditions were hindering the horse either. So I'm actually quite happy to see him as short as he is here, because I want to be siding against him at this current price. And I'm not overly keen on the first three in the betting. For all that they have the right connections, should have plenty more to come. And I thought that this race was a good race to try and take them on. So one further down at a bigger price who really does have to step up himself, really does have to improve himself, but clearly has every bit of potential to do so, is Kamari, who only has the two career starts so far, both of which coming this season as a three-year-old. Interesting to see him gelded prior to that debut after, here you go, Kenneth, this is a one for you, after costing 400,000 guineas as a yearling.
Let's go!
I got more expensive ones coming, don't worry, but that is still quite a good start. Being by Dubawi as a Group 3 winning dam, also a half-sister to a St. Ledger winner in Milan. So the pedigree is there to suggest his step up in trip is fine. For all, it's quite a jump up by 2.5 furlongs for his third start, but he looks very smart, capable of getting this trip. Hooded for his debut, did well though to finish second behind the 4-6 favourite at Newmarket, then having the hood taken off at Yarmouth when running out an easy winner of a Class 4 maiden. And we know that Yarmouth form isn't to be sniffed at all when citing potential Royal Ascot winners by any means. We've seen that in how many years now. And bearing in mind the doubts I have about those ahead of the market, I think Kamari is worth chancing to take this step up in grade and trip.
I like it. And in experience, plenty more to come as well. Pete, for you.
You're going to accuse me of stealing from your notes here, Amit, because I felt like Kyprios was pretty darn interesting from where I sit. Looks a bit overpriced. The race at Cork came back at a good time, and maybe as simple as not being suited by the soft ground last time. Kamari was another on the short list as well. But at the prices, I'm siding with Kyprios.
All right. We're back in Kyprios, who's coming out of a wide stall, which Rory was explaining yesterday and has explained in previous podcasts how important the wide draw can be, particularly when you're going around a bend at Ascot. If you're going in a straight line, not necessarily, but if you're coming around a bend, like you will be in the Queen's Vase, being drawn wide can be quite valuable to you. And I think Pete said it. So Pete and I are both on Kyprios. And a little endorsement from Pete for Kamari as well. So there you go. Kamari's coming out of stall three. But I think we'll be held up. So it shouldn't be as much of an issue for him. Yeah. You referenced Sir Lucan. It's interesting that Sir Lucan's gone on a break. They're not bringing him back till later in the year. So that kind of tells you something, I think. But we'll see. The 340, Duke of Cambridge Stakes. Lady Beaufort gave Palace Pier a bit of a fright, or at least ran a monstrous race, but it's very, very short. And Kieran Schumark is back on board after Oisin Murphy's exploits last time out. She's 2-1. As short as 13-8. What? That's madness. Generally 2-1 with everybody else, but dear God, there's a major firm going 13-8. Cop yourself on. It's Royal Ascot. Queen Power, 9-2. Double or Bubble, 12s. And Onassis 14s, Lavender's Blue, Chambers Elise 14s, double figure prices after that. Kate, Duke of Cambridge Stakes.
Yes, and unfortunately, I do think Lady Beaufort is the most likely winner here, for all that she is a short price, but it's probably is a reflection of her chances realistically. Maybe not the 13-8, that's a bit mean. But she's just been one of the stories of the flat season so far this mare, hasn't she? She's fast becoming a fan favourite, and after gaining that gutsy win in the Group 2 Dahlia Stakes on her reappearance start, she had Queen Power, the reopposing Queen Power, ahead behind in second, and who obviously with Queen Power we know came out and really impressed in a Group 2 at York, then on her next start in a very good time as well. And so she will give her another run for her money, you would have thought. But Lady Beaufort did her own brilliant bit of form boosting, running an absolute blinder to finish second, as you say, by 1.5 lengths behind Palace Pier in the Lockinge, where she just showed such a good attitude to find plenty for pressure, chasing the best miler in Europe all the way to the line. And it was just the attitude as much as anything to dig in that deep in defeat that we all loved. And she's just a proper, hardy 5-year-old mare, which is something you know, they're worth their weight in gold. And with her winner Ascot over just shy of a mile in Group 3 Valiant Filly Stakes last year, that should also stand her in good stead here. And I highly doubt she was flattered by her proximity to Palace Pier last time out, because visually it didn't look like it at all. And we know the better ground, the better chance she'll have, provided she can turn up here in the same form as those two later starts. She's very much the horse to beat, and I do think the market's got it spot on. However, there is one further down there who I do think's overpriced, so at least compensate me for siding with the favourite here. In Parent's Prayer, you can side with each way. I on the review show, I spoke about this filly after Epsom last time out. I was really taken by her because they switched tact with the filly after running her at Lingfield on her previous start, where she had taken a lead. However, at Epsom, she was really given a positive front-running ride for Machine Murphy, but she got out well, set perfect fractions, then quickened away in a manner of a much-improved horse. And she handled the track so well in the process. But it was just it was running a really good time as well. It was run 3.06 seconds faster than the following race in the Group 3 Diomed Stakes, with the same weight being carried by Parent's Prayer too, whereas she would have been carrying £3 less in the following race had she contested that. So that was a really big run, and the mare seemingly is just on the up with each of these runs. And as I said at the time, do not discount her at all, stepping up in grade next time out. So I'm happy to see her here, and she should not be overlooked to run a big race, I don't think.
Okay. I think that's a very, very fair shout. And you were very keen on her after Epsom. Holly Doyle on board for Archie Watson. What about yourself, my man, Peter Fornesal?
I was very interested in Lady Beaufort for all the reasons that have been laid out. I'm a little concerned about that 13-8 price. I'm hoping that doesn't become standard, because that would certainly make me want to go fishing in terms of prices. But it just felt like that last bit of form was a standout in this group. But if the price gets too short, there's just not enough difference between Lady Beaufort and the two that reopposed from the previous run for me to want to get stuck in at anything less than 2-1. In that case, maybe I'd make a speculative play on a runner like Double or Bubble, just trying to figure that we're dealing with a nice, improving four-year-old. The figures aren't really there to back up what looks like pretty decent form for me for Double or Bubble, but if we're dealing with a double figure price into the teeth of one of a favorite that's shorter than 2-1, I could potentially go that way. So I'm keeping my options open so far in this one. Not one of my stronger opinions. Going to wait to see the market form a little bit more, see if we can find another angle on the day. But that's the short list for me would be Lady Beaufort. Maybe take a look at Queen Power and Lavender Blue, and then maybe that idea on Double or Bubble. If Double or Bubble makes a nice impression on the day, one I could see taking a shot with at a double figure price.
I know that Champers Elise has been disappointing in her last three starts to a certain extent. She was only beaten 2.25 lengths, to be fair, at Newmarket last season, but definitely on her reappearances, she hasn't been quite there. But she has been running on soft, heavy ground. And I wonder if a return to firm, at least good ground, which we're pretty much guaranteed for the first 2 days, would bring out some improvement. And you can get 16s. Now, you'll probably get about £2 on, if we're honest. But you can get 14s, widely enough. So, but I'd be more inclined to lean in behind Parent's Prayer, probably. Sorry, Pete, but I'd probably lean in with... just because I remember how keen you were on her performance after Epsom. This brings us to the feature race of the day, and all the money is not for the defending champion, but for the superstar of last season, Love, who makes her comeback. Long-awaited comeback. It's kind of become a bit of a running joke on the show. We've talked about how many times they've entered her, how many times she's been withdrawn, to the point that Roy Delargy then said, "I don't believe in Love." Not the concept, the horse just like doesn't believe that she exists. So
we thought he was having an existential crisis to start with.
It might be, who knows.
We need an intervention.
But Love is a very short price favorite. 2-1 is the best you'll get. 6-4 is the general price about her. Lord North, the defending champion, who we haven't seen since Maidan, is 5-2. And then Armory, who was very impressive at Chester and ran a massive race down under. Screw you, you Aussies. 100-30, and the rest have got no chance. Is that fair enough, Pete?
I mean, I wouldn't say no chance, but I mean, that certainly seems to be the short list. I'd give preference to Lord North just because I feel like there's too much guessing regarding Love at the top of the market. And is 10 furlongs going to prove to be optimum for Love? Meanwhile, you've got Lord North, and we know this is optimum. That win last year, a repeat of that would get the job done. Nice comeback race in Dubai. I just feel a lot more confident. If I were going to pick one that you didn't mention or one that I'm certainly very interested to see how she gets on in here, Audaria, first run back after the Breeders' Cup. It's tricky, but I thought that was a very impressive run. And look, I'm not saying I'm definitely going to back, but I wouldn't say that she has no chance either.
Well, to be fair, that was a massive run at Keeneland. So we should mention her. And she had very good form in France as well, at Deauville and Longchamp. So yeah, Daria is a shocking omission on my part there. Kate, for you.
Yeah, it's really interesting, this race, isn't it? With Love making her reappearance start. And I would be wanting to take her on there. And as Pete just said himself, that this 10 furlongs may not be optimum for her. And, you know, even saw the Great Enable getting beaten in the Eclipse then against horses, well, against Gaia, who was far more suited than the trip than she was. And Love, I feel, may be similar. And especially, obviously, I'm keen to see her if she does turn up here then. But I am concerned that we haven't seen her since August. And as you say, she did have plenty enough races cited for her return and she just couldn't meet them, which does give you a concern that there are a few setbacks along the way. And you would love to see her coming here, with a prep run at least under her belt, but we don't have that. So for all I think she's a superstar and I love her, I want to see her win, I will be taking her on at the prices. Lord North, the biggest concern I have about Lord North is the ground. I just fear it's going to be on the lively side for him, as we know it'll dry out from the first day even anyway. And for all he's the horse to beat on form here, I would take this opportunity this time around to take him on at the prices as well. So the one who I think is the one to be siding with is Armory, Valedora's other runner in here, because he comes here already with a prep run under his belt. As you said, Emmett, winning that reappearance start at Chester in the Group 2 Huxley Stakes. There you go. Huxley Sharp. Sit me teeth back in, love. But in that win. God. Sit me teeth back in. I've still got another podcast to go. Goodness. When he justified 6-5 favouritism, had the rear close in Sangarius, 3 lengths behind in second, winning that 10 furlong contest well, considering a few of Aidan O'Brien's were running well but looking in need of their first starts at the time. But Armory was one that could get the job done in good style regardless. And his form last season was solid, finishing second behind previous stablemate, Sir Dragonet in the Cox Plate. And prior to that, running a huge race, finished third at 66-1 in the Irish Champion Stakes behind Magical and Gaeth, where he was only beaten 2 lengths. So yes, he is a 4-year-old now. We probably do know where we are with him, but bearing in mind the doubts about those at the head of the market, this lad should appreciate the better ground again, and this could well be his time to strike and get his head in front with that reappearance win under his belt as well.
I'm with you because I've already backed him.
Oh, well done.
I think he's coming in here very much under the radar, and look, Love could tear this field apart. Because Love could tear us apart.
Right. I knew that was coming. Right.
Sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm not sorry at all. look, people will look at this and say, hey, she's a Guineas winner. What are you talking about? But she did win over 12 furlongs, and that did look to be her optimum trip, and we haven't seen her since August. It's very difficult to get away from that fact. Like, they didn't take her to the Breeders' Cup. They didn't go to Hong Kong. That was it. And she's missed every engagement so far. Mm. And there's still the backup of the Pretty Polly. Like, the fact that she still entered for that makes me a little bit nervous. So, Armory, this is his target. And Oisin Murphy was very confident about Lord North, but I would take both of your viewpoints. We haven't seen him since Medan. Yes, he was very impressive there, but he's a big, bulky horse, Kate. I think your point about the ground is a very fair one to make. And also, is this too long a gap? Like, last year, it didn't necessarily count because you were coming in on this weird world. And he'd been to Haydock. So yes, he's the defending champion, but I would be very much inclined to take him on with Armory, who they thought a lot of as a juvenile. It just didn't quite happen for him as a three-year-old, but he came good down under, and they obviously decided to hold on to him, and I think it could be worth siding with him. So Armory is a best price currently 100 to 30, and of the market leaders, I think I actually might end up doing Armory, Adaria, Reverse Forecast, Box Exacta. Mm. Let's go. Box Exacta is three. Is that right, Pete?
Yeah, you need more than three for that.
I've messed that up completely.
That's a different. That's different. In our thing, you can absolutely do a two horse box.
Exactly.
It just it's like the same
it.
Thing as a quinella. But maybe
it.
It's different in the U.
No,
I don't know.
No. This all comes from our good friend Barry Faulkner, and I got torn apart on this show. It doesn't
Would
bother me at all.
Us?
Torn apart on this show by Rory Delargy. He's like, you're wrong. You're wrong. No, I remember watching the old original ATR with Barry Faulkner, and he'd be going a box exacta in this race. Which would be the 1-2. So yeah, the box exacta. That's what we're going for.
It just means in either order, like a quinella does automatically. Which is actually, if you're betting on the in the whirlpool, I'm not sure if there is an exacta. It might only be a quinella if I'm remembering it. Now I could be shockingly wrong about that, but I'm most impressed that in your box exacta, Emmett, you're using Adaria, a runner you previously said had no chance.
Yeah, exactly. See, I also flip flop. Remember, I flip flop a lot. And you made a very good point. So I flip-flop back to Adaria. And remember, I watched all of these horses this morning and looked at her win at the Breeders' Cup and was like, nah, not going to be good enough. But the second Pete said it, was like, actually, I've been very insulting to her. She's got a big chance here. Let's knock out the front two and go for gold. Speaking of the bets that you're going to be placing this week, you have to be betting with Tote. And look, obviously, we want to support the Tote put their money back into racing, but they're also giving a massive incentive to you to place bets with them. And here's why, particularly this week. Pete's just mentioned the Whirlpool. So you're going to have jurisdictions from Hong Kong. The Americans are going to be betting in, Australians. The French are going to be betting in as well. There's plenty of other jurisdictions who are not going to be as informed as you, but it does mean more gravy in the pot. Plus, any bet that you place, win, place, exacta, box exacta, place pot, whatever Tote bet you go for, 10% on top of your winnings with Tote Plus. But if you're betting with the Tote on a partner site or an affiliate site, that's great. But you're not getting the Tote SP guarantee, and you're also not getting Tote Plus. So what are you waiting for? They're giving you free money. Go to tote.co.uk, tote.ie, or the official Tote app. Tote Plus, 10% on top of your winnings. And when the Whirlpool is in play for Royal Ascot, you know they're going to outperform the SP the vast majority of the time. So get in. Tote.co.uk, tote.ie, or the official Tote app, and bet with Tote Plus, 10% on top of your winnings. That can make a massive, massive game change to your end of season. The Royal Hunt Cup is a puzzle that I'm fascinated to hear solved by both Pete, but first of all, Kate. Finest Sound heads the betting at tens. We've then got for John and Thady Gosden, who's done well in this race before. Thank you. Absolutely nailed that one. The Gosden Yard have done very well in this race in the past. Irish Admiral for William Haggis is around 12s in Magical Morning. You can probably get about 14s if you really shop around. Astro King, we should mention, because James Savage is on with us later on from the Sir Michael Stout Yard. Ryan Moore on board, generally about a 14 to 1 shot. Kate, what's the solution?
So for the Royal Hunt Cup, you really do want to be looking for those drawn middle to high, judged on recent years running of this race, with Settle for Bay coming from Stall 22 3 years ago, bursting down the centre of a track. And then the second place horse from that year, Afark, winning the following year from Stall 21, again with high draws being favoured in the places also, and leading Sandside Group from over a furlong out. And then last year, we saw Dark Vision threading his way through the pack on the Sandside. Yeah, that was unbelievable, really.
No,
that
it was sickening, is what it was, because I taking the piss out of him so much, and then he comes up.
After running into the back of every horse in the process as well.
In all fairness, like, and listen, best of luck to Mark Johnston, But, like, literally, the front page of the Racing Post said, "I'm still dreaming about his success. Oh, my God. That's a good one. I've never seen anything like it." And he sells him, makes a fortune to Godolphin, and he was rubbish afterwards. And I just was like, Coolmore probably bought Lope Fernandez for 900 grand based on what you said. And Godolphin has bought this horse, and he's rubbish. And I kept saying this, and then he comes out and wins. And well back to him, I was like, oh no, it's all come back to haunt me.
Completely mugged you.
Absolute nightmare.
And you would have been so happy throughout that run as well.
Oh, I was delighted with myself. And then he was, oh no. Oh, it's just going to be typical Dark Vision. Oh no. Anyway, go on.
Yeah.
Go on, Kate.
Yeah, drawn in 11 as well, Dark Vision for that. So middle, but then he threaded through Sandside. And I mean, even in that win, Montatham finishing second from stall 5, but he still came across to the Sandside, but challenged more towards the centre of a track, but still in that Sandside group. So you do really want to be looking for those drawn middle to high here, which is exactly what Grove Ferry is out of stall 30 of 30 here. And he has intertwining form with those towards the head of the market, because he finished 8th of the 18 in the Lincoln at Doncaster behind Hakiki with Brunch in second. And in that run, Grove Ferry was giving the winner £2, beaten 6.5 lengths. However, off of a £3 lower mark last time out, he managed to gain a gutsy win at Chester in a good time on the good soft ground over 7.5 furlongs. And he's been put back up £4 for that win. But he's now £6 better off with Hakiki for that penultimate start. And with Hakiki weakening out of things in listed company at Ascot last time out, that's enough to swing the value in Grove Ferry's favour, I think. And especially when you take into account how good his Chester win from last time looks as well. With Dulas winning at Goodwood on his next start, Kimran, who finished third, winning his next start at York, the fifth horse, Edge to Lab, finishing second on his next start, then winning at Epsom, the sixth horse, another Bats, winning his next start at Thirst, and even the 10th and last placed horse, Ascension, bouncing back to win well at Newbury on his next start. So all the form is there to expect Grove Ferry to back his own win up and boost it further with another win, and he's a good price to go with it. And the other one, just at a bigger price to chuck in, you know, I was saying earlier about the expensive and more expensive one to side with. Well, the natural horse that comes to mind.
Please say Medani.
It is. I get him wrong so often, this horse, but he's enough of a price to chance small stakes each way, because he has a huge amount of talent when on a going day. He just isn't the easiest to predict. And every time I feel like I side with him, he disappoints. So hopefully this won't be one of those occasions. I think he can run a big race. He'll certainly appreciate the quick surface. And for all his mark is high enough nowadays, he should still be good enough to run into a place, has a good draw to boot in 24. So small stakes each way, Medani, but the main bet's going to be Grove Ferry.
Remind me how much Medani cost.
1.3, was it?
1.35.
1.35 million guineas as a yearling. Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's going to make all that back as a gelding now.
Yeah.
But as you said, beautifully bred out of Attraction by Dubawi. I quite like him, actually. And I think that he's massively overpriced for Mark Johnston, who, of course, won this race last year with the aforementioned Dark Vision.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God. and is beautifully drawn as well. So, yeah, I quite like Medani. But I also am very much very keen on the second horse that you mentioned, Medani's 20s, and we're getting 16s about Grove Ferry. Mm. Follow that, Peter Fornatel.
I went through the form here, and it was one of two spots on this card where I felt a little bit out of my depth, and I decided to bring in the heavy hitter. So I reached out to Rob Dove, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK today.
Who had 32 minutes, 55 seconds for the Rob Dove mention, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK. Every time.
Well, I got to give props to my man. I mean, the only reason I know anything really about racing in the UK is running into this random group of pro punters circa 2006 at Cheltenham, who took me under their wing and, you know, taught me how to read international form. So I like to give props. But he made an interesting case for one that you mentioned, Emmett, in Astro King.
Oh.
Did pretty well to make up ground the last day. And should be more suited to a straight mile. I definitely see the points on this, and I think the price is right. A bit of a guess in a complicated race, but that's where my money's going to go in the Hunt Cup.
Okay, well, if it's coming from Rob Dove, to be fair, all joking aside, Rob Dove is a bloody legend. and is responsible for countless winners on the show, despite never making an appearance on it.
That's impressive. That's a good ratio.
It's bloody impressive.
Don't be offended. He doesn't come on my show either.
No. Rob is a very, very private person, but he's more than happy to have his name thrown around as long as it's with the line, one of the top 10 pro punters in the UK.
So a call back to the old forum.
The Betfair forum. The old days. Oh my God.
I wasn't sure if we were allowed to mention Betfair. So I
it's all good. Betfair are all good. In my eyes, they're all good. I have no problem with them. They're all cool. Plus, we've got loads of good friends still there too. But the old Betfair forum went mental after a while. Astro King, for Sir Michael Stout and Ryan Moore. I think he can get 16s. Not for much longer, though, particularly if Rob Dove is placing bets. Seriously. And he is actually coming into 12s. So, you better act fast and act very, very fast. And you got two big price sources from Kate as well. We've got a TriCast here. Let's go with the TriCast. Astro King, Grove Ferry, and Maidani. Let's go.
Hey, for next year's asking.
Damn right. Combination TriCast. Yeah, let's go. We've got it.
Yours might be a bit more expensive than ours, but hey. I'm sure we'll still cover it.
And he is bound to be flying first class as well, because it's only first class for the best. So we got Ruthin in the Windsor Castle Stakes, which obviously we're going to go first of all to you, Pete, and favorite. Frankie Dettori, interestingly enough, is taking the booking here. Johnny Velasquez is going to be on board Golden Bell. So the market is speaking in Ruthin's favor, but Golden Bell won as well. And thanks again to Aidan O'Brien for giving us the exclusive that Al Mafi Coast would be his runner here. And I think he's being a little bit underrated. Now, most bookmakers have gone eights about Al Mafi Coast, but there is one that is still dangling 12s. So if you can get it, take it. And interestingly enough, he also wears a first-time tongue tie. Aidan describing him as the showcasing out of the footsteps in the Sandmare, because he never mentions his juveniles' names. He always goes with the breeding initially. But I was quite taken with how he spoke about him, and he comes in with a lot of experience. That being said, though, Pete, there are two here from Wesley Ward's yard. So take it away, my friend.
I'm thinking the market has it right. Ruthin, to me, has looked the more impressive of the two. And it sounds like the reason she's here instead of with her stablemate, Twilight Gleaming, earlier on, is simply that Twilight Gleaming worked a little bit better than her. And I think it's just a case of he's so bullish on Twilight Gleaming that he decided he wanted to separate the two. But Ruthin made such a good impression, easy winner on the turf at Keeneland. The figure wasn't as good as some of the Wards ran later on at Belmont, but that also might just be the 5 or 6 weeks earlier that she came out. I think she's really good, and I'm very interested in her. As far as Golden Bell, I don't get her as much. The figure was just okay in the dirt race. There is plenty of turf on the damp side of this pedigree. I suppose it would be no surprise the booking of Johnny V, certainly eye-catching, but especially this year, you know, he's going over to quarantine for 5 days to ride it all. He's going to pick up any mount he can. I'm not going to read too much into that. I feel like Ruthin is extremely logical in this spot, and I'll have at least a token wager on her.
Okay, Ruthin is definitely going into some sort of lucky 15, lucky 31 combination, multiple, let's head to Dubai bet based on that confidence. That being said, what do you like, Kate?
Yeah, no, I am of the same opinion. I mean, realistically, Pete, how many winners are you expecting Wesley Ward to go home with?
I mean, the way it's racing, right? So if I were to set a line, I'd probably put it at 1.5. You know, yeah. I mean, I'd be very surprised if he didn't get one. And I think he's quite likely to get two. And he's certainly got a chance to get three. But we'll also see what kind of form the barn is in and how much this ground affects proceedings. And what the wind is like, too, becomes a big thing for the Ward team, because they typically all have so much speed. If a headwind picks up, that could hurt them. So there's a lot of guessing, but that's where I'd put the line. I'm going to back at least three of them.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, I think that's fair. Because sort of looking through his runners, I was of the mindset of two. So I'm taking a lot of confidence in you saying the 1.5, but siding with three of them. I mean, he thinks that what's he called again? Coffee maker.
You got it. Coffee maker.
That's the one. Yeah. I thought he was fairly British about him. But I do still think that these two on the Wednesday at the head of a market in the Windsor Castle and the Queen Mary do look really nice fillies. He should be pretty hard to beat in these as well. And yeah, as Pete said, the fact that they're choosing side of Twilight Gleaming over Ruthin for the Queen Mary, as I was saying earlier, you could take it one or two ways, but I would also be of a mindset that he is just very bullish about Twilight Gleaming as well. So I do think that Ruthin should still be good enough to win this, and especially because she was the antipost favourite for the Queen Mary. But really impressive the way that she bolted up then on that debut start at Keeneland. And she's a daughter of Ribchester, who's had a decent start to his stallion career so far. His first season as a sire, a couple of good winners so far, and Ruthin being the only one though to win on debut, which does make her interesting should she improve from that debut start as the other winners have done. And considering Ribchester's Ascot record himself, where he ran there three times, won two of those starts, finished second on the other in the QE2 behind Minding. So that should, she should take to this track on that basis, you would have thought. And she was just really impressed on that debut start, running out the 6th length winner. So she should be quick from the gates, as we know Wesley Ward's juveniles are, and may not be for catching. So yes, Ruthin for me as well.
Okay, we're all going Ruthin then. We're all just going to plow in. And instead of waiting till the end, let's just ask you now, you said you're backing three, Pete. I presume that means you're backing the favorite in the Queen Mary. You're backing Ruthin. Who's the third?
I'm interested in Nakatomi a little bit. I that was a very fast speed figure, and the market was just not that coming for Nakatomi in the same way. I think the other Ward runner in that race was getting all the hype. But again, using that same idea of just trying to use the speed figures as a pointer to how they're going to do here. The Nakatomi race was really fast. That was the fastest of the Ward juvenile numbers before Twilight Gleaming came back in that second run at Belmont and put up that number in the high 80s.
Two questions for you. Any concern that he's been gelded, so it's a first-time gelding operation, and that Johnny Velasquez has chosen Lucci over Nakatomi?
It's not great, but I think that's, you're getting compensated in price. I'd say it's as simple as that. The gelding doesn't really bother me at all. The GRV choosing the other runner definitely, and Lucci looks pretty solid. There's probably some signal in that, but I think you're being more than compensated for me in terms of the price.
And Oisin Murphy more than compensates for Johnny Velasquez as well. Although probably on board due to his connection to Qatar Racing and being first jockey for them, but still a terrific jockey booking for them. So that's in the Norfolk Stakes, which is on the Thursday, and blazing 5 furlongs. And yeah, I think he'll be very interesting. Be very, very interesting. So it'll be the opening race on the Thursday on Gold Cup Day. So we're all just plowing into Ruthin. And let's go on Malfi Coast for the Box Exacta. Screw you, DeLarghi. I was right all along. I bloody knew it. DeLarghi's not even here to defend himself. He'll be on that later on, and we'll be giggling, and you won't know why. Anyway, the last race. Pete, what's the reaction in America to Royal Ascot learning from last year, deciding, yeah, let's go with 7 races per card, but changing it, not having it start early, back to the original 2:30 start, and having this Twilight race at 6:10.
Oh, it's fabulous from our point of view. It just brings the racing more into the window when we're accustomed to wagering. And 9:30 is still plenty early for us to get going as well. So, I mean, I think it's a case of the more the merrier. This is a meeting that's picked up real steam over the last few years, especially with the fine job NBC has done picking up and adding to the international feed. I think that this is a change for the positive as far as the USA market. Goes.
Yeah, I think Nick is pretty pleased about it, and Nick, of course, will be the anchor for NBC for the week, and will be crushing it as always. You can watch the NBC feed if you would like in Ireland or the UK. There are ways of doing that, but I'm not going to tell you. Well, actually, no, I can. What's the name of that site? You just download. Normally, I wouldn't have been able to say this in the past because they'd be like, no, you can't say that because Sky Sports, blah, blah, blah. We don't want people not subscribing. There's something you can use on Apple TV and Chromecast. You know it. You know it. You know how to get it. Just Google it. You'll get it. You'll get it for fine. But I do think
a colorful bird. Is it an app that rhymes with a color? Not rhymes with, but it resembles a colorful bird.
Well, there is Peacock. Yeah, and just change your so Peacock is NBC's streaming service. So just change your VPN to America. Log on to Peacock and watch Nick Luck for the week. There you go. Done. I do probably suspect that when this news came through, that Ollie Bell went, "Oh my God," and just collapsed on the ground, because that poor man has to do the opening show and then this. And it ain't no fun when it's 30 degrees and you've got all of the racing to cover. Cheltenham, 5 races and you're out. Gone. 6 and a long day in sweltering heat in that bloody get-up where you're not allowed to take off your hat or somebody will come over to you. Would you please leave, sir, without making a fuss? And I love you, Ascot. I love you. Favorite race course in the world. Dear God, man. Dear God, it's going to be a long day for Ollie and the team. My thoughts are with you. Seriously. They don't even have a hammock for him to have a nap in. Like, I would need a nap. You just have to do the opening show and then stay there. Just die a slow death in the heat. Oh, my God. Anyway, Kensington Palace Stakes. Sorry. I just am thinking of it from a broadcaster's perspective. And poor Ollie.
I'm just picturing him in a hammock now.
He's up at 6 a.m. He's up at 6 a.m. to be on
the Royal Enclosure in a hammock. Don't mind him.
Yeah, stay away from him. Brando somewhere in the background is going, stay away from him. Leave him alone. He, don't touch him. Have a great week, Ollie and team. My thoughts are with you. My God. And please don't do anything about a Scotch egg again this year. Right. The market lights on. And for our last race, Ryan Moore is on the favorite for Sir Michael Stout and Cheveley Park. So it's the old team. Teaming up again, 11-2. We've got Dream Loper for Oisin Murphy, our good friend Oisin, who was on with us again, 8-1. So I Told You for Joseph O'Brien, 17-2. Stunning Beauty for Saeed Bin Saror with Sylvester D'Souza on board, because obviously it would be idiotic to put James Doyle on. I mean, he's just... Why am I being thrust with this kid, James Doyle? He doesn't know anything. Jesus, Saeed, just put him back on your horses, for God's sakes. The man's a world-class jockey. Pete Fornatel, who wins the last?
This was the other one where I reached out to Dove. For the record, I'll have my VPN fired up, and at the risk of sounding like I might have a career in politics here, Emmett, I'll have the VPN on one TV where I will be watching Alex, and I'll have the other TV with the local NBC feed watching Nick. So
you're going to have one VPN on for Sky and Alex and Jim McGrath and the team. And you're going to have just your basic, your actual cable package with NBC.
I can't. They're all there. I'm so lucky that I can say at this point that everyone involved is a colleague, and I want to see how they're all doing. You know, we'll just go back and do a little bit of back and forth.
Great. You did land yourself in it though. You didn't say anything about Ed and ITV, and now Ed is like, well, screw that guy.
No offense to the ITV coverage. I've worked a little bit with Ollie, but I don't know that team. I don't know that team nearly as well, and I don't have a third. I don't have a third big screen here on the desk. The Brooklyn Bunker. We'll have to work on that. Well, I like that idea. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage.
Oh, yeah. And the Euros as well. Anyway, who wins?
That's right. You've got to worry about that too. This was another race I reached out to Dove. He made an interesting case for Waliak. This one been running over 10, held up off slow paces, could do better with the turn back and distance off a fast pace. She made a big move into the race last time before fading. I thought it was an interesting case for one. Should be a bit of a price in the nightcap.
You can get 16s. I think, yeah, 20s is gone. 20s is gone. Rob Dove has obviously just decided, I'm getting this before he tells everybody on the Final Front podcast. So, 16-1 about Waliak is the best price. You got to go and do another 10 podcasts today. So what's your best bet of day two?
I'm super excited about Twilight Gleaming. I'm going to keep it simple.
Okay. What's your best bet of the week?
I haven't done the form for everything yet, but I mean, Twilight Gleaming, I'm probably going to end up betting as much on as anything. So I could keep it real simple and go there, but that's a little disingenuous in that I haven't like doped out the rest of the days yet. But okay. I'm pretty comfortable saying Twilight Gleaming doesn't go well. It could be a long week for Ward. I really think Twilight Gleaming is the one I want.
A long week for all of us if that one doesn't go in, to be fair. Tesco noodles for the month. And Nakatomi, of course, you've talked up as well. Go, run, be free, my man, be free. It's a pleasure as always. Hopefully we'll chat to you on one of the review shows. And enjoy Royal Ascot.
I love it. I can't wait. I'm going to be listening to all of your shows this week with great interest and always a pleasure working with you guys and picking up all kinds of good stuff. Have a great week and we'll be talking soon.
And have a great week.
Thanks so much, Peter.
In the Money.
Have a great week.
In the Money Players Podcast is where you'll find our man, Peter Fornatel. The guy's an absolute hero. And just hear Kate's voice. He just makes you feel good. So Kate,
definitely.
With that in mind, Rob Dove has given us the winner of this race. Are you in agreement?
Yeah, this race. Oh my goodness. I found this really, really tricky to solve. And especially because we have no previous stats to go on because it's the first running of this race. Yes. So I can't even hark back to anything to fit a mold by any means. So it's going to be a historic win for whoever gets their head in front here. And because I found it difficult to solve, I'm siding with the value here. And that value is represented by Lola Showgirl. Now, there are plenty of candidates to make the Royal Ascot breakthrough this year. And one such person I think can get even closer than last year is David Lochnan, and who almost did it last season when training Caroline Dale to finish third at 100-1 in the Queen Mary. But he has two chances in this race, Lola Showgirl and Fionn, who are similar prices here. But I'd marginally favour Lola Showgirl, who has only been given a £2 rise for her win last night at York when gamely winning a men's amateur jockey's handicap over 7 furlongs on soft ground. And of course, that form can always be taken with a pinch of salt. But at the same time, the handicapper can often take a similar view of such a win, which can very often play in your favour. Because of how much they get put up and the lack of an increase then in their mark. And that latest start was also a reappearance start, and there should be more to come from her. And I remember seeing her last season and saw her win at Chepstow. And when analysing that form at the time, I took a dim view of it, but that reappearance start was a marked step up on anything she had shown previously, and improvement as a four-year-old might well stand her in even better stead here, and especially with Laura Pearson taking her £5 claim off the filly's back too, and Laura Pearson may well be another one to come here on the back of a great time of things and make a Royal Ascot breakthrough herself. So I thought Lola Showgirl probably represented the value, but otherwise I'd be siding with the class angle of lights on here to be the class act in a handicap, but she's at the head of a market and I've already sided with too many shorter price runners on Wednesday, so I can't do it again here.
I like that, just pure. By the way, what the hell just happened? Waliak just won a Sea of Blue, 14s.
Oh my God, who is tuning in?
Pete clearly just went, I just told the team on the final, 11s, oh my God! This is like the stock market. This is like watching.
He's pressed ascend in the WhatsApp group now.
It's like watching. It's like watching Bitcoin just collapse in price. And go, thank God I didn't invest there, or got out when I did. Okay, so Lola Showgirl, Laura Pearson, as you're saying, it could be a first Royal Ascot win for her. Her only booked ride so far, I think 23 wins this season, and a very valuable £5 claim. And Waliak is a very, very strong fancy. For Rob Dove / Peter Fornatel. Who's your best bet of the day, Kate?
Grove Ferry is going to have to be, just because of the price behind him as well in the Royal Hunt Cup. Yeah, Grove Ferry will be the one.
I'm going to shock and awe people. Armory.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there.
Yes. It would have been too easy to go with the Wesley Ward horse, particularly when Pete's done that. And it also means we've given you a patent. So go to war with the patent. Maybe we'll do a lucky 15, and we'll throw in a horse that I genuinely do really like in Kyprios. And I think Aidan actually mentioned Kyprios first in the interview. He said the horse who was beaten in the Linfield Derby trial, Kypros, Kyprios, whatever the hell he's pronouncing. I think that's the horse he mentioned first, and then Hugh Garden or Wordsworth, who Ryan Moore's on. So yeah, Kyprios is 16th, and that gives us a lucky 15. Let's go. That's it. Kate Tracy, a pleasure as always, and very much looking forward to chatting to you a little bit more about Royal Ascots later on today. More work to do. So from Kate, Peter Fornatal, one of the UK's top 10 pro punters, Rob Dove.
I have no idea.
Why am I getting all these WhatsApp messages? What's going on? And me and Mr. Kennedy, thank you very much for listening. More Final Four podcast, Royal Ascot previews coming your way very, very soon. So keep an eye out on the wherever you get your podcasts. And retweets appreciated. Likes, shares, whatever it is you like to do. Really appreciate it. Enjoy Royal Ascot. Enjoy the day. Hopefully, we've had another 7 winners. Talk to you tomorrow. God bless.
The Final Furlong podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.